You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And happy last day of the year. Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. It's not actually the last day of the year, but it's the last live show we're going to do. And it is Friday, which means it is time for our national town hall meeting, Brunch with Bernie. Senator Bernie Sanders, just named by The Nation magazine as America's most valuable progressive for championing Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, defending the Postal Service against privatization threats, and opposing media consolidation schemes. Congratulations, Senator, and welcome.
Good to be with you, Tom, and thank you very much.
It's great to have you with us. And so what's going on there?
Well, there is a lot that's going on. So let me just tick it off, and then we'll take some questions in a few minutes. Sure. Obviously, people are watching the whole debate over the fiscal cliff as we speak. The president, Harry Reid, Mitch McConnell, John Boehner will be getting together at the White House. No one really has a sense of, to be honest with you, what is going to happen. But I think at the heart of this issue is not just a financial debate, but a major political debate. And that is, in my view, Tom, it just seems very, very clear to me that right-wing extremist Republicans are in charge of the House of Representatives, and their views are way, way, way out of touch with what the vast majority of the American people believe. Yet they control one of the branches of government, and the choice, therefore, that we face, that the president faces and those of us in the Senate face, is do you compromise significantly with people who are way out of touch with the American people, or do you make it very clear what they are trying to do and demand that the American people get actively involved in this debate to force the Republicans in the House to start listening to what the American people want? Let me just give you a few examples. A poll came out recently, very consistent with every other poll that I have seen. This is Washington Post, ABC, last week. 72% of the American people said, yes, people making $250,000 a year or more should pay more in taxes. That's what the American people believe, because they understand that the wealthiest folks in this country are doing phenomenally well, and yet their effective tax rate, remember Mitt Romney not releasing his tax returns for that reason, their effective tax rates are very, very low. One out of four major profitable corporations not paying a nickel in federal income tax. So the American people are very clear about that. Our Republican friends in the House are saying, no, we don't care if somebody is worth $100 million, $1 billion. We do not want them to pay a nickel more in taxes. What we right-wing Republicans want is to move toward deficit reduction on the backs of the elderly, the children, the sick, and the poor. What they want to do is cut Social Security, although Social Security has nothing to do with the deficit. They want to cut Medicare or raise the retirement age, the eligibility age, to 67, make devastating cuts in Medicaid, cut back on education. That's where they are at. And the American people, in that very same poll, 60%, including many, many Republicans, said, do not cut Social Security, don't cut Medicare, don't cut Medicaid. So we have this really strange moment where a branch of government is controlled by folks who are way out of touch with the American people. And I think the president has got to be very, very strong on this. And I think if he is, if Democrats remain strong, we can win that issue. Second issue, when we talk about the economy, it is not just the deficit. Deficit is an important issue. I worry very much that the media gets bored very quickly, changes subjects very quickly. They are forgetting that 23 million Americans are unemployed or underemployed. We are remain in a severe, severe recession. For many workers who are employed, their wages are going down. People are working longer hours for low wages. Their kids are leaving college deeply in debt or can't afford to go to college. Their homes are underwater. So the working class of this country is, in fact, being decimated. Middle class is disappearing. You can't forget about that. Yes, we have to pay attention to deficit reduction, but you cannot ignore the reality that we need to create millions and millions of decent-paying jobs by rebuilding our infrastructure and transforming our energy system. other issue, obviously, that's out there. Everybody's heart was broken. Could not believe what happened a couple of weeks ago in Newtown, Connecticut. It is just a nightmare. It's a parent's worst fear. And it's an issue that we have to deal with. We have seen too much of this mass violence, mass killings. But it is, you know, and I support and I voted for a ban on assault weapons. That's not the issue. That's part of the issue. But we got to go beyond that. We have to understand that today there are millions and millions of Americans who already own these Bushmasters, these AK-15 weapons. We have got to deal with the issue of mental health. I could tell you, Tom, that in the state of Vermont, I get many calls from parents or siblings who are saying, you know what, there is somebody in my family. I'm really worried about him. I'm worried about her. I'm worried about what he or she might do to himself or do to other people. And yet I cannot find the mental health counseling that we need. So that's a very serious issue. And the third part of this thing is we are just a country where the media, where these video games are just, you know, just perpetrating gratuitous violence for our kids, which is just not acceptable. And I think the media is going to have to take some responsibility for that as well. Now, some of the other issues we're dealing with are, I just came from a meeting dealing with filibuster reform. I think many Americans understand that one of the reasons that very little is being accomplished in the Senate is the Republicans time after time after time are demanding 60 votes and killing legislation, not debating it, not having an up or down vote, but just filibustering it to death without having to even get on the floor and speak. So we are working hard to try to bring about a situation where on January 3rd, when the new Senate is sworn in, that we can at that moment, with 51 votes, change the rules, make sure the minority has all the protection they need to express their point of view. But we cannot allow a minority to run the United States government. Majority is supposed to rule in a democracy. That doesn't exist right now. Two other issues that I want to briefly touch on. One is, again, the issue of media consolidation. We've talked about it a whole lot. I want people to understand that right now the Federal Communications Commission, the FCC, is looking at very bad rules which will allow within the largest 20 markets, media markets in this country, one company to own two television stations, eight radio stations, and the largest newspaper in that area. I think that is a dangerous trend for democracy. It ends the diversity of opinion that we need. We have too much media consolidation now. That would make a bad situation worse. Last point that I want to make. I will be, in January, the new chairman of the Senate Veterans Committee. And the VA is a huge institution. It's a $140 billion a year budget. We have some 8 million veterans enrolled in the healthcare system alone. Millions of others are getting various types of benefits. And I would love to hear from folks out there who are veterans, who have thoughts about how we can improve the VA, how we make it more responsive to veterans, how we improve what is a pretty good healthcare system now, but how do we make it better? So I'd love to hear from veterans on that issue.
That's quite an extraordinary list. As we and by the way, if the president makes a speech, we're monitoring this. We'll give you a shout and let you know what's said, if anything comes out of this meeting that's happening right now. We will be back with more of Senator Bernie Sanders. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour, our national town hall meeting, where Senator Sanders will be taking your questions right after this, 15 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And be sure to check out Bernie's website. It is just spectacular. Sanders.senate.gov, a great news resource, a great newsletter you can sign up for.
Time keeps on slipping, slipping, slipping into the future.
20 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Senator Bernie Sanders taking your calls. And Archie in Yucca Valley, California, watching on Free Speech TV. You are on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi, Senator Sanders. Why why aren't the Democrats and you guys in these negotiations, not you, I know you talk about it, but talking about capital gains and earnings on that philosophy that a dollar earned, no matter how it's earned, should be taxed. And Ronald Reagan tried something 25, when he tried a 25%, you know, working people's tax and rich people's tax. Explain it to me, please. Make noise.
Well, when you, the answer is I agree with you. What Archie is saying is that right now, if you're out as a police officer, as a nurse, as a construction worker, as a teacher, you pay taxes on all of your income. On the other hand, if you are earning a lot of dividends through stock ownership or capital gains processes, you are going to be paying a lower percentage in taxes. And I can't argue with Archie. I agree with that. Now, I think when they talk about revenue, what they're talking about, Archie, and the president has talked about this, not as far as you would want or as I would want, but he has talked about it. It's not just asking that the top income tax rate go up from 35 to 39.6. He is also talking about raising the rate for dividends and, I believe, capital gains as well.
Okay. Gray in Nevada City, California. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi there, Senator Sanders. Good to hear your voice, sir. I was hoping that this upcoming session that you could introduce a replica of the legislation introduced by Marcy Kaptur in the House to bring back the Civilian Conservation Corps. This recession has hurt everybody, but seems to have hurt the young particularly bad. And this isn't something new, something unknown. This is part of the American tradition. And one of the first projects I've told people, even before the shooting, we could do would be to build new mental health facilities in this country.
Well, Marcy Kaptur, by the way, is a wonderful congresswoman from the state of Ohio, and is somebody I worked with very closely when I was in the House. I think the idea that Marcy is talking about makes a lot of sense, and there are various ways that you can do it. But the bottom line here is we have 23 million people unemployed or underemployed. That percentage-wise, the number of unemployed young people is significantly higher than the national average. You've got a lot of young people out there struggling desperately with high student loans, college loans. Can we develop an approach which puts people to work in a variety of ways in education, in rebuilding our infrastructure, in transforming our energy system? So the answer is yes. I believe in that very, very strongly. Whether it takes the form of an old CCC in the 1930s or a different form, I don't know. But bottom line is there is an enormous amount of work that needs to be done in this country. You raise mental health. God knows we need a huge increase in the number of people who are able to provide mental health in this country. We need more teachers. We need to rebuild our crumbling roads and bridges. And rail system needs a major expansion. So there is a whole lot of work to be done, and we have to develop the jobs programs to do that. The concept of the CCC is an intriguing one, and I think it's something that can be part of the entire approach.
Kathleen in Peterborough, New Hampshire, watching on our website at tomhartman.com. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Senator Sanders, good afternoon.
Hi.
Why do so many in Congress want to take, from the working and lower middle class our money, e.g. the CPI change they want, the Medicare, Medicaid cuts, our money from our earnings and benefits that we get in Social Security and Medicare, but those same Congress people want to keep giving entitlements like the Bush tax cuts and other write-off benefits to the top 1 and 2%.
Well, Kathleen, you've asked, I guess, the $64 question, although I think, Tom, we don't use the word $64 anymore, but
I think it's become 64,000 or 64 million.
But that is the question. And Kathleen, look, let me tell you what, I think most members of Congress don't tell you. You have certainly within the Republican Party, a belief that their main job in the Congress is to represent the wealthy and the largest corporations. And at the end of the day, if you really kind of drill into what they're saying, what they are saying is we want to make the rich even richer. We want to make large corporations pay even less in taxes, lower their tax rates. We want to expand unfettered free trade so we can move all over the world, pay people pennies an hour, and throw American workers out on the street. We want the opportunity to stash our profits or our savings in the Cayman Islands and in other tax havens, because we are the rich and the powerful. And we have the right to rule. We have the right to do anything we want, and to heck with anybody else. So that is essentially what the struggle is about. You have a party that now controls the House, right-wing Republicans, who do not want to ask billionaires to pay a nickel more in taxes. In fact, want to continue to lower taxes for the people who are doing phenomenally well. But they're very, very worried about the deficit. And the way they want to do it, as Kathleen indicated, is to attack the programs of people who are struggling to stay alive economically in these very difficult times. So in a sense, what you're really talking about, Kathleen, is class warfare. Are people who are waging war against the working class and the middle class of this country.
27 minutes past the hour, we're talking with Senator Bernie Sanders. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour, our national town hall meeting here on the Tom Hartman program, where you can ask a question of Senator Sanders and get an answer. It is an extraordinary time in American history, and we're so grateful that Senator Sanders comes here and does this. We'll be right back with more.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And check out Bernie's website, sanders.senate.gov. It's a great news source, a great news site, as well as a great newsletter that he has that you can sign up for. Welcome back. And don't for our listeners in the Pacific Northwest, don't forget, starting next week, we will be on the air on KBCS 91.3 FM in Seattle, Washington. So, new station here. It is our Brunch with Bernie hour. Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us. You're still there, Senator?
I'm right here.
Okay. Wayne, listening to WCPT in Chicago, Illinois. You have a question for Senator Sanders.
Yes. Good afternoon, gentlemen. I would just like to say to the senator, sir, would you please run for president the next presidential election? Because we need people like you, just like a person in the middle of the Sahara Desert needs water. So if there are no African-American males in Vermont, there will be one if you run, because I will be there to help you.
Wayne, thank you
very
much.
Anyway, what I would like to say is, why are the Democrats not concentrating on things like the military budget? The military budget is over $1 trillion. They can't even bring auditors in to audit the military because there's so much waste, fraud, and abuse. Why is the president trying to take the easy way out instead of doing the hard work? He wants to cut Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. But why not go out to people like the Department of Defense, who are wasting so much money, hundreds of billions of dollars that could be cut? Why not pinpoint the waste, fraud, and abuse in Medicaid, in Medicare, and stop doing what the Republicans want? Because ever since Social Security came into existence, the Republicans have wanted to destroy it. So he wants to open the door for them to destroy it. So I'll listen to my ass off the air. Thank you very much.
Okay, Wayne, thank you very, very much for your comments. I agree with everything you said except one thing. The military budget is not now going to be $1 trillion. It'll be less than that. But it is a huge budget. And Wayne is quite right that if you were to go to the Secretary of Defense now and say, can you give me an audit? Do you really have a breakdown on how we're spending money? But they will say it is so complicated, they almost don't have the computer technology to do that. And that is simply not acceptable. The second point I think that Wayne made, and we've been working on, is the enormous amount of waste and fraud within the Department of Defense. I did a study. I passed an amendment which brought forth a study, I believe it was from the General Accounting Office, to take a look at fraud within the Defense Department. And what we found is that virtually every major defense contractor, from Lockheed Martin to Boeing, General Dynamics, all of these companies have at one point or another been convicted of fraud or reached a settlement with the government in which they paid a fine in lieu of being convicted of fraud. Furthermore, time and time again, you're seeing huge cost overruns for weapon systems. They say they're going to do the project for X billion, and it ends up being a whole lot more. So I have no doubt, and furthermore, right now, we are spending almost as much on defense as the rest of the world combined. So I think Wayne's point is well taken. I believe that we do need a strong defense, but there is something wrong when we have triple defense spending since 1997, and we can make judicious cuts, and certainly we've got to deal with this issue of waste and fraud.
Bernie, apropos of all those corporate felons, in about half the states of the United States, largely at the demand of Republican state legislators, people who have committed felonies can never again vote. Could we not at the very least say that corporations that commit felonies cannot get government contracts?
Well, let me tell you something, Tom. If you did that, you would not have a defense system. There would be no products being made for the defense
wow.
Department because virtually all of them.
And you'd have no banks.
You know, and the issue is, you know, you have a huge corporation, Lockheed Martin. To what degree are some of these things mistakes? Are low-level people doing it? We don't know.
Yeah.
But virtually every single defense contractor has been involved in fraud or reached a settlement with the government in which they paid out money for misbehavior.
Remarkable. Carl, in Lebanon, New Hampshire, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi. Thanks to the Senator for all of us. My question is, how can we get the Republicans off of this the thought that reduction in taxes creates jobs? If that were true, the reduction from 90% to the current level would have created so many millions of jobs, we'd need every immigrant we could entice.
Carl, it
how
is,
can we get them off of that?
Well, I'll tell you how you get them off of them. You defeat them. Look, you know, as I mentioned earlier, I think it was Kathleen from New Hampshire asked the question, what goes on in Washington, and I suspect in many state governments as well, is you have, in this instance, a political party which represents the wealthy. That's all. Now, they can't do a 30-second ad which says, look, I got a huge campaign contribution from the rich, and that's why I'm fighting for lower taxes for the wealthy and large corporations. That wouldn't be a good 30-second ad. So what you do is you have these think tanks, whether it's the American Enterprise Institute or the Cato Institute or many others, come up with economic theories which just coincidentally, they're funded by corporations, and just an amazing coincidence, Tom, their conclusions always seem to benefit large corporations. But it gives you the myth that there's some intellectual foundation for what you're doing. So when you give tax breaks for the rich, it's not because they made huge campaign contributions to you. It's because ostensibly it's going to create jobs. And we have a whole theory called trickle-down economic theory. But I think, as Carl and others have pointed out, it doesn't work. If it worked, we would have had a booming economy under George W. Bush, when, in fact, we had one of the worst job creation situations, records, in the modern history of America. We actually lost private sector jobs. So it is a bogus theory, but it is funded by large corporations and the wealthy, and its function is to protect large corporations and the wealthy. And the way you deal with it. It's not convince these Republicans. You defeat them. You organize working families and the middle class, and you then demand that Democrats stand up and vigorously protect working families. You want to create jobs in America? It's not by giving tax breaks to billionaires. It's by rebuilding our crumbling infrastructure. It's by transforming our energy system away from fossil fuel into energy efficiency, wind, solar, geothermal. Manufacture those products in America. Change your trade policies so that large corporations can't move to China and pay people 50 cents an hour, a dollar an hour, and bring their products back. We know what to do. But right now, you have a Republican Party wedded to big money and too many Democrats who are not prepared to stand up to big money.
Deborah in Floyd, Virginia, watching on Free Speech TV. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hi, Bernie. I just want to say, I mean, we love you out here. You're one of the few out there that are really speaking up for the American people, and we really love you. I say I love you all the time on Facebook. I don't know how often you see what goes on Facebook, but I follow you there, and I just wonder why is it we don't have more like you out there saying this stuff, and do your words fall on deaf ears? I mean, really, you're the only one that seems to be speaking out for us like this.
Well, thank you very much, Deborah, and I really do, you know, I appreciate the support we're getting from folks all over this country. Do people hear what I say? Well, we just had an election in Vermont, and I got 71% of the vote, so I think people in Vermont are hearing the message. And there are, Deborah, there are a lot of good people in the House and the Senate. Somebody mentioned earlier in the show Marcy Kaptur, who is a congresswoman from Ohio. There are many, many others. There are strong progressives. The difficulty is, Deborah, sometimes, you know, I do this show every Friday with Tom, and I've been doing it now for, what, Tom, 6 or 7 years.
Yeah, at least, yeah.
And so we have the opportunity to take time and to talk to people, and I love it very much. And I love the work that Tom Hartman does. Many other members of Congress who are saying similar things just don't get the opportunity to be heard all over this country. And many of those viewpoints don't get into the newspapers. They don't get on to CBS or NBC or ABC because, you know, by and large, those media outlets are owned by large corporations, so not all that enthusiastic about hearing those points of view. But, Deborah, there are a number of people in Congress who are working really hard for working folks.
Does the you were instrumental in putting together the Progressive Caucus when you were in the House, Bernie. We have just a little less than a minute. Is there not enough time to take a call? Is there a way that people can be supportive of the Progressive Caucus, you know, in general?
Yeah, when I was in the House, when I was elected, we put it together. It is now one of the largest caucuses in the House of Representatives. Some great people in that caucus. And I'm sure some of them, Raul Grijalva has been on your show.
Oh, yeah, many times.
I am sure, and many of your listeners have heard some of those folks. They have a website, and I think people can visit the website and start communicating with some of the members of the Progressive Caucus.
There you go. Okay. Thank you very much. Senator Bernie Sanders is on the line with us. He's taking your calls in our national town hall meeting, Brunch with Bernie, here on the Tom Hartman Program. Check out Bernie's website at sanders.senate.gov.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Back right after this with more of your calls for Bernie. Also, you can check out TomHartman.com. Our new Tom Hartman app has our daily blog on it and our list, our stack, all the links to the things we talk about. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and it's our Brunch with Bernie hour. Senator Bernie Sanders with us, taking your calls. Stephen in Los Angeles, watching on Free Speech TV. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yes. I wanted to ask about the idea of means testing Social Security. It's something that seems to be coming from the right. Mitch Daniels had suggested it, and it's complex and subtle enough that it seems to be an issue that, you know, something that progressives might be able to support, and because, you know, it denies benefits for people with high incomes. Can you address that?
How
do you feel about that and the complexity of that issue?
I can, Steve. And here's the problem with it. And you're right in saying that on the surface it sounds good. So you'll have Republicans saying is that you know, does Warren Buffett really need all of his Social Security benefits? Does Bill Gates really need all of his Medicare benefits? And people laugh and say, these guys are worth billions of dollars. It doesn't matter to them. And you're right. But here is the problem, the long-term problem. You can today say, well, you know, nobody who's making more than $1 million a year should receive A, B, and C, cut back on their benefits. Everyone says, what's the problem? But once you break the universality of a program, once you break the concept that we're all in it together, over a period of time, that $1 million threshold will become 500,000, and then 50,000. And then 20 years down the line, what you have is a welfare program rather than a strong Social Security program or a strong Medicare program. Now, my view is that the wealthy should, in general, pay more into the programs, not cut their benefits. So what you can do with Social Security, and we've introduced legislation to do that, is to lift the cap, which is now at about 113,000, or in a few days will be at 113,000. You lift that cap, and then starting at 250, going all the way up to millions, if you do that, you'll have substantially more revenue coming into the Social Security Trust Fund. That is the way I think you could solve the Social Security situation, and it makes a lot more sense than cutting benefits and ending the universality of that program.
Linda, in Gillette, New Jersey, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi. I was just wondering about the president's powers. So he didn't seem to be able to do anything when there was a majority in the House at the the middle of his first term. And I was wondering, now that seems to be the same kind of stuff is going to go on and on, what are the powers that he actually has at his command? How is it possible for him to cut through and implement by the force of his office any of these programs that people seem to be in majority?
Well, Linda, I mean, you've asked the question that, you know, people have written very big books about and will have disagreements about. The president cannot be, certainly the president, through executive orders and other processes, does have an enormous amount of power. I'll give you one example. What our Republican friends are going to do again is threaten not to lift the debt ceiling so that if it is not lift, the United States of America, the most powerful and wealthiest nation on earth, will actually default and not pay out what it owes, which will have huge international implications. Some of us believe, in fact, that the president does not have to negotiate with right-wing Republicans on that, that he does have the power under the 14th Amendment to pay the bills that the country incurs. In terms of other problems in the Senate, that really is not the president's problem. That is the dysfunctionality of the Senate and the fact that we have Republicans who have demanded 60 votes and filibustered. So people say, well, a few years ago, Democrats controlled the House, the Senate, and the White House. Why didn't they do more? And the answer is the Republicans demanded 60 votes, and except for a very short period of time, we didn't have the 60 votes. And even then, you had some outliers, some Democrats who chose not to go along. So your point is well taken. I think the president probably could exercise more of the inherent powers that he has. But here in the Senate right now, we have got to get our act together and make sure that a minority does not keep obstructing what the majority wants to do. But then you got in the House where the Republicans do control that that place, and that brings forth a whole other set of problems.
Mm-hmm. Bernie, we have about 2 minutes before the end of the hour here. I don't think quite enough to bring in another caller. I'm wondering your thoughts on the end of the year and the year ahead and where we're at, what we should be doing.
Well, you know, here's what I think. I think the elections turned out not in everything that we wanted, but by and large better than most people thought they would. Democrats gained 2 seats in the Senate, which surprised a lot of folks. They gained, I think, 9 seats in the House. Obama won a pretty strong victory. I think what we need to do, and it gets back to the point that Linda just made a few moments ago, but it's not just the president. What we have got to do is demand that the Congress and the White House do what the American people want, and that the president and the Democrats in Congress just cannot continue to compromise with right-wing extremists. They are in a minority in terms of their beliefs. Very few people in this country, I doubt 20%, think that we should give more tax breaks to billionaires and cut Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and education. People do not believe that. That's what the Republicans in the House believe. And what we need is a real uprising on the part of the American people. We need them to be flooding their senators and their congresspeople's phone lines and get on the email, get on the internet, start emailing people. Let them know that you're watching them, that what they are saying, that it is not acceptable that they continue to represent the wealthy and the powerful at the expense of the middle class and working families of this country.
Bernie, thanks so much for all you do for all of us and for being on this program, and I wish you the very happiest new year.
And I to you.
Thank you, Bernie. Senator Sanders' website, by the way, sanders.senate.gov. Be sure and check it out. Up next, Anything Goes Friday. Your topics and mine. I got a couple things to rant about, too. Here, we'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And just a couple of quick thoughts here about what could have been and what was in the last year and what lessons we should take from this. Senator Sanders was just on, and he was talking about how the Republican Party is basically wholly owned by very rich conservatives and corporate interests. And yeah, there's some very, very wealthy progressives, too. God bless them. But they, by and large, are working for the benefit of all of us, of society, whereas the very rich conservatives seem to be working exclusively for the interests of very wealthy conservatives. And so, I mean, just consider some of these things. Okay, the first, KP put together a list. Apparently, it originated, or parts of it originated over at the Huffington Post. But this was a list that was published on Democratic Underground last Friday and yesterday. And John Boehner had said, as you recall, 2 years ago in 2010, when the Republicans took control of the House of Representatives, that they were going to be focused like a laser on jobs. So what'd they do? What did the Republicans who control the House of Representatives, you can't bring up a piece of legislation without them. I mean, you know, they control the agenda. Something can't get to the floor if John Boehner says no. It only gets to the floor if he says yes. And it only passes if, you know, if the Republicans say yes. So the House of Representatives passed 46 bills on abortion, 113 bills on religion. Have you heard jobs mentioned yet? Remember that he said he was going to be laser focused on jobs? 113 bills on religion, 73 bills on family relationships, 36 bills on marriage, 72 pieces of legislation, 72 bills on firearms, 604 bills on taxation, 437 pieces of legislation on government investigations, mostly Republicans investigating the White House. There were 33 bills passed that would have defunded Obamacare. Now, they didn't succeed. They didn't get through the Senate, so they didn't succeed. But 33 times they tried it. 15 times they tried to cut funding for Planned Parenthood. 3 times they tried to cut funding for Veterans Administration hospitals, which is the only genuinely socialist medicine in the United States. Medicare is not socialized medicine. It's single payer. The Veterans Administration, because, you know, Medicare actually pays third parties. But in the Veterans Administration, the VA actually owns the hospitals and the doctors are employees of the government. It's socialized medicine. It is also the most popular form of medicine in the United States. Three times Republicans tried to cut funding for the VA hospitals. They failed. They did succeed in blocking a lot of things. Now, keep in mind, have you heard me mention anything about jobs yet? No. Okay. There was a bill to aid small businesses. They blocked that. It's introduced by Democrats. There was a bill to extend unemployment benefits for 99 weeks. They blocked that. They blocked bank reform bills. A lot, you know, some of these were in the Senate, actually, some of these blocks, but most in the House. They blocked campaign finance reform and an open contributions law. There were multiple job bills, numerous job bills that were blocked by Republicans in the House of Representatives and Republicans using the filibuster in the Senate. There was a major infrastructure bill that was blocked. They blocked ending tax breaks for companies that outsource jobs. They blocked reform of Wall Street. They blocked legislation that might have cleaned up our energy situation. I don't know if you saw the article in today's New York Times about how Ireland has put a carbon tax on everything that involves the use of carbon. And the consequence of that is that their homegrown wind industry has just exploded. Their carbon footprint has shrunk. That basically nobody has been hurt by this. And the country is far less dependent on foreign oil than they used to be. So what about, you know, really poor people who have to drive to work? They give them actually credits for that. They give tax credits to them for that to make up for the difference. So carbon tax is working great in Ireland. Now we can't have something like that here. In fact, the oil spill liability cap, we were going to increase that. In other words, make oil companies right now, if they create, you know, an oil spill that does a lot of damage, after a certain point, you and I pick up the bill. And we were going to raise that cap, that limit. No, not so much. The Republicans wouldn't do that. There was a mine safety bill. After all those miners died, no, the Republicans blocked that. There was a bill that would have lowered the tax breaks that the oil companies get. Not done away with them, just lowered them. No, they blocked that. And there was a bill to impose charging, which they blocked, to charge American oil companies on oil taken out of the Gulf of Mexico. In other words, you're going to, you know, put at risk this environmentally sensitive area. We're going to set aside some money to protect it or remediate it. No, sorry. The number of true job bills that were allowed to come to the floor of the House of Representatives for a vote in the last 2 years that the Republicans have run the House of Representatives? Zero. Zero. Not one. Now, during the 2 years that the Democrats ran the House of Representatives, before the Republicans took control, they passed, and then they got past the Senate, the largest middle-class tax cut in history, a bill to save Chrysler, a bill to save GM. They turned 800,000 monthly job losses into gains. They increased education spending. They cut student loans by billions of dollars, although they're still way too high, too much. They strengthened hate crime laws. They expanded the Affordable Care Act, or they passed it, actually. They expanded the CHIPS program, Children's Health Insurance Program. They expanded enforcement of child labor laws. They did reform Wall Street. It was called Dodd-Frank. They did reform credit card practices. That was a piece of it. They stopped predatory lending to soldiers, made it illegal. This is when the Democrats were in control, the 2 years before that. This is 4 years ago. Troops got paid for stop-loss time. Bush was sending them off to war and not paying them. Can you believe that? They stopped torture. They actually increased spending on the Veterans Administration, which presumably is why in the last 2 years, the Republicans tried to cut it back. They changed the law so that women could serve on submarines and also so that women get equal pay with men. They passed a nuclear arms reduction plan and a nuclear waste disposal plan for those arms, or a disposal of the nuclear, not the waste, the as they take these weapons apart, disposing of the pieces so that they can't be used to rebuild nukes. They strengthened the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency. They broadened the powers of the Food and Drug Administration. They funded, finally, 10 years after 9/11, they funded, the Democrats funded the 9/11 responders health care program. And they repealed Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Democrats in charge, a lot got done. Republicans in charge, not so much. For example, the Center for American Progress is reporting the most important bills blocked by Republicans in 2012, a minimum wage increase. House Democrats proposed legislation in June that would have raised the national minimum wage to $10 an hour. This is where it was in 1960 in inflation-adjusted dollars. Republicans blocked it. Campaign finance transparency. It's called the Disclose Act. Republicans blocked it. The Buffett rule. In other words, no executive will ever pay less taxes than his secretary. No, the Republicans blocked it. The Employment Non-Discrimination Act, which would have made it illegal to discriminate based on gender identity or sexual orientation. No, the Republicans blocked it. And a UN treaty to protect the equal rights of the disabled. Nah, the Republicans blocked.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And now the Republicans and the Democrats are getting together at the White House, and they're going to try and figure out what to do at the end of the year here. They've only had 14 months knowing this was coming on.
In olden days, a glimpse of stocking was looked on as something shocking. Now heaven knows. Anything goes.
Anything goes. Friday here on the Tom Hartman Program. And, the two wasted years with the Republicans running the House of Representatives. So one last thought on this, and then I'm going to pick up your phone calls. I almost jumped in when Bernie was talking about it, but it's really that hour is his hour, and I try to bite my tongue. But when he was talking about how unproductive this Congress has been over the last 2 years, I really think there's a historical precedent, and that was the Congress of 1946. In the election of 46, the Republicans took control of the House of Representatives for the first time since 1928. It had been, 18 years. And they held the House of Representatives for 2 years. And during those 2 years, they did everything they could to block and obstruct everything that President Truman was trying to do. The one piece of legislation that they passed was the Taft-Hartley bill, which kneecapped the right of union workers to unionize and established the ability for states to make themselves into right-to-work-for-less states, to opt out of many of the provisions of the Wagner Act, the National Labor Relations Act. And Harry Truman was so competent, and our media at the time was sufficiently diffuse, broken up, fractured all over the United States, and truthful that people got it. But Harry Truman was so competent at labeling these guys the do-nothing Congress that he ran against that Congress in the election of 1948. And not only did he win the election, but he also knocked the Republicans out of the House of Representatives. And they did not control the House of Representatives again until the Clinton administration in the 90s, when Newt Gingrich led this comeback with his very charismatic shtick, his contract on America stuff. So here you had, basically three generations of America where the Republicans only controlled the House of Representatives once, and that was only for 2 years. And in fact, if in the election, after the census, the Constitution requires every 10 years there's a national census. And as a consequence of that census, that each state redraws congressional districts to make sure that they've got the right number of congresspeople representing the right number of people, so that everybody has a relatively equal voice in Congress, at least from state to state. And the Republicans redrew the districts in a number of states, in Ohio, in Virginia, in Florida, in ways that even though they lost the states with regard to the House of Representatives, in other words, a majority of people in Ohio voted for Democrats, voted D for the House of Representatives in Ohio. And yet still, 3/4 of the people that they sent to Congress were Republicans. Same thing in Virginia, same thing in Florida, same thing in Wisconsin. I mean, it's a number of states like this. Because of this, it's called gerrymandering, this rigging. I mean, this is what it's come down to. You have a political party that represents millionaires and billionaires and big transnational corporations exclusively. And the only way that they can hold power is to rig elections by screaming about things like, voter fraud. Therefore, we've got to have, IDs and, government issued ID. Oh, and that ID isn't good or not. Well, a concealed weapon permit will get you the right to vote in Texas. But your student ID? No, sorry, not going to work. Oh, you don't own a car? You haven't gotten to drive well? Tough luck. So we have a political party here that would not be holding power right now. Right now, the Republicans would not hold the House of Representatives. The Democrats got a million more votes than the Republicans did for the House of Representatives in the election that just eight weeks ago. A million more votes. In fact, it's closing in on 1.5 million. But the Republicans are holding the House because they've been able to rig, e.g. gerrymander, the congressional districts. And, they thought they were going to win the White House because they knocked about 8 million people off the voting rolls this year with these voter ID laws, these American Legislative Exchange Council bills that came, out of this ALEC, this organization that was founded by the Koch brothers back in the day. Paul Weyrich, our voting as the number of voters goes down, our influence in the elections goes up. Right? You've heard that clip a million times. I won't bore you with it again, but this is a party that is only capable of holding power by rigging the game. So here's my hope. And my expectation, frankly. I think, A, we live in a time of revolutionary change. And I don't mean violent revolution. The Reagan years were revolutionary. FDR was revolutionary. We live in a time of fundamental change. It's going to happen. How it's going to happen, I'm not sure, but I think it's going to happen, and I think it's going to happen in a relatively short period of time, a matter of a year or two or three. And we're going to see the repudiation of 3 decades of Reaganomics. Americans are waking up. The Democrats picked up seats in the Senate. They won the White House, and this was all in the face of all these states rigging the election laws so that it was hard for people to vote, Democratic voters to vote. And the Democrats got, 1.5 million votes more than the Republicans in the House of Representatives. Eventually, this is going to catch up. And the Democratic Party needs to be ready. And you and I need to be there, pushing them in a progressive direction continuously, day after day after day. And don't give up and don't get discouraged. The old cliche, it's always darkest before the dawn. It's really true. This cannot last. It won't. The American people are clearly saying no to the Republicans.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And to take it out of a partisan frame, it's not even Republicans, Democrats. It's plutocrats versus working people. And the working people are getting it that the plutocrats have rigged the system. Minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And anything goes Friday here as we approach the end of the year and New Year's resolutions. That's so cliched, It's like every day we need to be making resolutions. Yes, today I am going to do something useful and productive and positive and, well, anyway. Mark in Roswell, Georgia. Hey, Mark, I used to live in Roswell, Georgia. How you doing?
Hey, hi. Tom, it's an observation of mine, and my wife can't really understand what this fiscal stuff is about, but basically quickly to try to say there's still about 55 or so of those Tea Party nuts in the House of Representatives and some of them that are in the Senate, too.
Right.
And they cannot accept that Barack Obama got reelected, and popularly, too.
Right.
I think what it is, I tried to tell my wife, is that these guys are basically on strike. They're saying, I'm not going to work. I told my wife, you go to your job, and your boss, after you get there an hour, says, aren't you going to work today? And you say, no. And then he says, why? And you say, because things aren't perfect. And so I think that they are willing to drive the thing off the cliff, if you want to call it that, and take a chance on wrecking whatever there is about America that can be wrecked, because they want to start it up in their new image.
Yeah.
And the thing is I think this is a constitutional crisis. I hope I'm wrong. We had a chance to vote these guys out, didn't do it, because I know some people who vote for people like that.
Mm-hmm.
There's two things that you can do that I know of. One, you can have a recall election. The other, maybe not possible, but maybe impeach these guys and remove them and have new elections.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, we can't impeach members of the House of Representatives because the House of Representatives is who does the impeaching. And they're arguably not committing any crime by, you know, having their political loyalties be wherever they happen to be. I think the biggest problem that we have is that our media is not accurately reporting that. People don't really realize what these guys are up to. They let them go on TV all the time and just lie through their teeth, and nobody calls them on it. So, you know, but I think the bigger problem that we have here, Mark, is, you know, this is my rant yesterday about Billionairistan, is that there is a group of very wealthy, very powerful individuals and some very large transnational corporations. You know, a quarter of the most profitable corporations in America pay no taxes whatsoever. The individuals, by and large, are paying, you know, like Romney, you know, 8, 9, 10, 12, 15% maximum income tax. And they can do very well with or without the United States. They don't need average working people. They don't care. They don't need us as consumers anymore. We're pretty much tapped out as consumers. We've been wiped out. I mean, we've lost the equity in our homes.
Tom,
we've,
I'm watching CNBC right now. And I'm watching what the Dow's doing and all that, and it's not selling off. If the people in the markets, they say, oh, the markets. But you remember back in 2008 and 9 when they said, no, let it collapse. And you remember the stock market sold off hundreds of points a day, 500, 700, 800.
Yep.
And then they got the message. Nothing's really happening in the markets. It's a buying opportunity.
Yeah, and that, well, arguably, I think that what's going on is that we have successfully, and I use that word advisedly, we have successfully made the transition from a society that is largely a we society where we're all in it together to a far more stratified society where, you know, you've got the people who are making money on money and who are making money in the stock market. Living in a world that's independent of that, of the people who are, you know, living from hand to mouth, or people who are, you know, having to work three jobs to maintain a decent standard of living, or the people who are, you know, hoping that unemployment doesn't get caught at the end of the year.
I'm going to stop you and say, and then I'm going to, you know, close. But what I like to say is the good thing about the election is that all the people that these people on the right wrote off as unimportant, that they have no guts, that they wouldn't. They got out there and stood in lines and waited to vote and gave Obama a substantial victory in
the
electoral college count and the popular count. Yeah. And these guys are shocked to no end. And this is what we're going to have to do as people.
Yeah, I don't disagree at all, Mark. And Mark, thank you very much for the call. But apropos of your point, I see two things going on here. One is this billionaire stand. And it's not just in the United States. I mean, some of these people live part-time in Europe or in South America or in Hong Kong or whatever. They can live anywhere in the world. I mean, we're talking about people who are wealthy beyond anything that you or I could ever imagine. And they have succeeded by virtue of making sure that John Roberts and Sam Alito got on the Supreme Court to empower Clarence Thomas and Antonin Scalia and drag along, you know, this poor schlub, Anthony Kennedy. They have succeeded in changing the basic nature of our Constitution, of our system of government, so that now the very wealthy and powerful can own politicians. And they don't even have to own them by virtue of giving them money, helping them get elected. They can own them by virtue of terrifying them. That's the more frequent way. You've got Republicans right now who are looking over their shoulders. Literally every Republican in the House of Representatives and a third of the Republicans in the Senate, they're looking over their shoulders right now, afraid that the Koch brothers or Shelley Adelson or some other, you know, cranky billionaire is going to fund a hard right, a Tea Party challenge to their incumbency in the primaries coming up a year and a half from now or a year from now. I mean, it's that close. The House of Representatives is reelected 100% of it every 2 years. One third of the Senate is up for reelection every 2 years. And they know that if these guys come in and just drop the bomb on them, they're toast. So they're going to toe the line. What we have is this perpetual campaign. All of these Republican members of the House and Senate, and not an insignificant number of Democrats as well, but mostly the Republicans. There are some Republicans who have absolutely safe seats and they just, you know, they can have a little bit of integrity. A little bit. Olympia Snow, maybe. And there's, you know, certainly a fair number of Democrats who are just, you know, the people solidly are with them. The Raul Grijalvas and the Jan Schakowskis and the Sherrod Browns of the world. And the Bernie Sanders, you know, an independent. But on the Republican side, it is Hunter S. Thompson territory. I mean, it is fear and loathing in Las Vegas all over again. They are scared to death of the billionaires. And if we don't do something to change that in the next 2 or 3 years, then our economy is going to collapse. And there will be revolutionary change in the United States. And we will flip either in the direction of a heavily authoritarian state, a Mussolini's Italy, or in the direction of a far more progressive state. We're either going to look like Sweden today, or we're going to look like Italy in 1934. But it is not going to stay like this. It can't. It's a house of cards. It's fundamentally undemocratic, small d. It is a broken system. Elizabeth Warren won her Senate seat, beat Scott Brown, who really was very, very effective at pulling the wool over people's eyes, never even used the word Republican in his campaign, didn't have the word Republican on his signs, on his website, and yet he voted with the Republicans almost every single time. He was there for them when they needed him. He is the go-to guy for Wall Street. She beat him by coming right out and saying, in fact, we've got the sound clip of it around here someplace, coming right out and saying, the system is rigged. You know, I got some news for you here. The system is rigged. Here it is. Here's Elizabeth Warren.
People feel like the system is rigged against them. And here's the painful part. They're right.
She's right. And that can't stand for long. I was talking with Richard Wolff last night, the professor of economics out of New York. I believe I forget which university he teaches at, so I'm not going to name it because I'd probably get it wrong. But in any case, he's a brilliant guy. He's the author of a number of books. He's been on this program a number of times on the radio show. He was on our TV show last night. And I said, you know, it looks to me like something's going to pop. Like this is, you know, the darkest before the dawn. What maybe a better metaphor is the ninth month of pregnancy. And what do you think? And he said, he quoted some Russian philosopher or economist, and he said, you know, for decade after decade after decade, it looks like nothing is changing and nothing is changing and nothing is changing. And then all of a sudden in a few years, decades worth of change happens. And that's what he's expecting. And that's what I'm expecting. It's what those of you who've been listening to this program for years, you know I've been talking about this for some time. And not like, you know, I've been predicting the end of the world for, I mean, basically about a year and a half, 2 years, I've been saying, you know, we're now at the point where Reaganomics has gone so far, it has become a cancer, both on democracy and our economy.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And if we don't fundamentally fix our democracy and our economy in the next 2 or 3 years, all bets are off.
Never before in all our history have these forces been so united against one candidate as they stand today. They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
Okay, everybody in the chat room. down it goes. Oh, my. It's been an interesting year. It's going to be a fascinating year coming up. I think this could be one of the most important years in the history, and certainly the modern history of the United States. Ryan in Minneapolis, Minnesota, listening on AM 950, Minnesota's progressive voice. Ryan, hey, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Correct me if I'm wrong, but as I understood, the Federal Reserve holds $4 or $5 trillion of our $16 trillion debt.
Yeah.
And so I guess what I was wondering is, why couldn't they just forgive that? I mean, it'd be kind of like if my wife gave me a loan, printed some money, and lent it to me, and we're both in the same household. Why not just forgive it?
Yeah, technically they could. I think that practically they can't. I mean, it would kind of blow up their system. The one option that Ellen Brown suggested, the woman who wrote Web of Debt, she's been on the program a number of times. Her website is webofdebt.com. She proposed this like 3-4 years ago as a wild idea or an extreme idea. And then, since then, people are starting to think maybe seriously it's a possibility, is that the Constitution says that the Treasury Department can mint coins and determine their value. Okay. And so we have two kinds of money in circulation here in the United States. We have coins, which are the property of the Treasury Department, which is you and me. It's the federal government. And then we have paper currency, which is the property of the Federal Reserve Bank, which is a private bank, and it's not you and me. And so most of our financial transactions depend on the Federal Reserve. But the Treasury has the power under the Constitution to mint a coin. And in fact, there's been legislation made that was passed years and years ago that said that platinum coins could be minted in any denomination. There's some things about gold coins and silver coins having to have in some way reflect the value of the intrinsic metal. But platinum coins can be minted in any denomination. So the Treasury Department could mint a $1 trillion coin made out of platinum and mint, say, 5 of them. And so what they've done is they've brought into being $5 trillion. Now, that sounds like a wild, extreme thing, but the fact of the matter is that during the banking crisis, the Fed brought into existence over $30 trillion and loaned it to the various banks and big corporations and General Electric, and actually a number of billionaires got loans from the Treasury Department as well. So this is not an amount of money that would create any kind of major fiscal dislocation. The Treasury Department could mint $5 trillion worth of coins, which would be 5 coins. And they could then use that and say, okay, this money is now, we're going to put it on deposit in the account of the United States with the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve is going to have to recognize it because the Congress has the authority to do this and the Treasury Department has the authority to do this. And we're going to use, and then take that, that cash account. Actually, I don't think they even have to cycle it through the Federal Reserve. Take that money and use it to retire $5 trillion worth of the federal debt. There's about $3 trillion worth of the federal debt that you don't want to retire. You can't retire. It's the Social Security Trust Fund. And, eventually Social Security is going to need that money. And in the meantime, you want us to be paying interest on it. There's arguably another $1 trillion or $2 trillion of, I think you said 3 or 4. It's been a while since I've seen the numbers, but there's a couple $1 trillion that is held by the Fed itself. That's not a problem for us. We can own our own debt. they're, more than half of our total debt is owned by Americans. And a lot of them are Americans who have invested. I mean, you know, when George W. Bush was born, he was born a millionaire, and that $1 million he was born with was invested in treasury bills. So, you know, it's one of the things that, you know, rich people like to invest in. So the debt that, you know, is really not even that big a concern. But if you want to do something about the debt, let's buy the foreign-owned debt. And, you know, the Chinese own a little less than a trillion. The Saudis own a little more than a trillion. The Europeans, principally the Brits and the Germans, own about a trillion. So there's, you know, $3-4 trillion there in externally owned debt that we could just retire. We could just say, okay, we're going to pay you guys back. We're going to cash in those bonds. And that would be a way to do it. It would not be inflationary, at least over the short term. I don't think it would be over the long term. I don't think it would be any more inflationary than the actions that the Fed takes. And for that matter, the Fed could balance it by just dialing back the number of dollars that they create. So, you know, this is something that could be actually easily solved if Congress had the guts to do it. Now, you know, don't plan on that. But, you know, it just similarly, it's just like the same thing. Like the president could say, oh, you don't want to raise the debt ceiling? That's fine. And I'm going to direct the Treasury Department to continue paying our bills. And we're going to, you know, because we've incurred these obligations because the 14th Amendment says that the full faith and credit of the United States shall not be questioned. In other words, we must pay our bills. It's right there in the Constitution. And so the debt ceiling is unconstitutional. You can say, sue me, and I'll see you in the Supreme Court in a year or two. And that's the end of that. I mean, he essentially emasculates the Republicans. He takes away their biggest club. So there's a couple of ways this could be done, Ryan, and I don't think that they are, you know, totally insane. What they would require is incredible political courage on the part of the White House, because, you know, this is the Treasury Department works for the White House, and secondly, it would require somebody saying, arguably the president, saying, we're not going to do the dance anymore. You know, enough of the kabuki theater. You know, we've been pretending to take John Boehner seriously. We've been pretending to take Mitch McConnell seriously. Yes, there is a balance of powers. We recognize that. We acknowledge it. We respect it. But at a certain point, the interests of the nation have to be put above the interests of the billionaires who are pulling the strings in the Republican Party and the transnational corporations that own the Republican Party. You look at what's going on in Ireland, where they passed a carbon tax, and it's the best thing that ever happened to Ireland. Read the article in today's New York Times. I mean, there's so much that can be done, that should be done. And anyway, end of rant. Ryan, thanks for the call. That's a step. And Ellen Brown has written very eloquently about this on a number of occasions. She's talked about it on this program. If you just go to DuckDuckGo.com, my favorite search engine, and type in Ellen Brown, Tom Hartman, platinum coins, you'll find it.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 6 minutes past the hour. Anything goes Friday. The breaking news from the Associated Press. The president met with the Republican and Democratic leaders of the House and Senate. That would be Harry Reid and John Boehner. Excuse me. John Boehner in the House of Representatives, Nancy Pelosi. Thank you. Nancy Pelosi and John Boehner in the House of Representatives, in the United States Senate, Mitch McConnell, a.k.a. McTurtle, and Harry Reid. And, well, I'll just read you the TPM's paraphrasing the AP. President Obama is not offering a new deal to avert the fiscal cliff during a meeting with congressional leaders at the White House, the Associated Press reports. Backbone? Apparently. Good news. So the question that I have, and I know, you know, we've got a fair number of listeners in Tennessee, and I know we've got a lot of people who watch the program on Free Speech TV, on Dish Network, DirecTV in Tennessee. In particular, we've taken a lot of calls from Tennessee over the years. So those of you who are in Tennessee, maybe in, it looks to me like all our lines are full right now, so you might not get through, but if you can try and get in, if you live in Tennessee, is there something in the water? I don't get it. Bob Corker, Republican senator from Tennessee, Lamar Alexander, Republican senator from Tennessee. Y'all have two Republican senators in Tennessee. And out of all the Republicans in the United States Senate, and there's almost 50 of them, these two crazies just introduced a plan to raise the federal debt limit by $1 trillion. And as I pointed out, the president should just laugh at them and go ahead and just say, you know, this thing is unconstitutional. We'll see you in court. And in the meantime, we're going to, you know, the full faith and credit of the United States shall not be questioned. He should literally laugh at them. The guy's a constitutional law. He was a professor of constitutional law. He's read the Constitution. But what they want to do is they want to say, okay, we will raise the debt limit by $1 trillion. Now, keep in mind, this does not give the president the authority to spend one extra dollar. Raising the debt limit does not mean that the president or Congress or anybody else can borrow and spend or tax and spend or anything. It's got nothing to do with new expenditures. What raising the debt ceiling does is it allows the Department of the Treasury to pay the bills that were run up during the George W. Bush administration for two wars that were not put on, that were not put on the budget. They were put on our national credit card, for Medicare Part D that was put on the national credit card, and for a massive recession that's costing the country a lot of money in both lost tax revenue and expenses associated with people being out of work, everything from unemployment to Medicaid. But these two crazy guys, I don't know how to, you know, Bob Corker and Lamar Alexander, the two Republican senators from Tennessee, are saying, we'll raise the debt ceiling by $1 trillion if you will cut specifically Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid by $1 trillion. Let me say that again. These guys, How can y'all in Tennessee send people to the United States Senate who do things like this? Medicaid provides for health care for poor children. Medicare and also for, you know, it's the major source of support for people in nursing homes. Medicare is health care for people over 65, and Social Security, a third of Social Security payments go to people who are, you know, like Paul Ryan when he was a teenager and his dad died. His mom went on Social Security survivor benefits. It's literally widows, orphans, and disabled people, a third of Social Security. And the remaining two-thirds has taken poverty among seniors from 20, 30, 40% down into the teens. I mean, it's more than cut in half poverty among seniors. It's old age anti-poverty insurance. But these three programs are not just for old people. If you're 20 years old, you should be concerned that Social Security is around, because you could get in a car accident, God forbid, and end up in a wheelchair, and you will be on Social Security. In all probability. Or you might lose your job and, you know, get financially wiped out, have to declare bankruptcy, get, you know, lose everything. And if you got student loans, you can't even discharge those in bankruptcy, thanks to the great bankruptcy reform that we got during the Bush administration. And you end up broken in debt. And you notice, hey, I get this pain in my side, or this lump in my breast, or something going on with my guts, and I don't know where's and who's going to pay for the doctor? That's Medicaid. if you're 20 years old, 30 years old. I'm not talking to seniors here. Seniors understand all this stuff. I'm talking to y'all in Tennessee who are in your 20s and 30s and 40s and 50s, who are in your teenage, well, in your teenage years, you can't vote until you're 18, so, but you can still call and raise hell with, you know, call your senator's office and say, what? You want to do what to my grandparents, to my parents, to my brothers and sisters, to me in a couple of years? Lamar Alexander and Bob Corker today said cut $1 trillion out of Social Security, Medicare, and Social Security. And as I just pointed out, these are not just programs for old people. Probably a little more than half of them in total goes to old people, but that means in the neighborhood of half of them goes to people who are not old people. That's you in Tennessee. So if you live in Tennessee, if you understand what's going on, I don't get it. How do these guys think they're going to get reelected? I know, you know, Tennessee is not full of stupid people. There's a lot of good, smart people in Tennessee. Was Davy Crockett and Daniel Boone, those stories, were those Tennessee or Kentucky? I think that was Kentucky, wasn't it? The Kentucky rifle and the whole thing. That was Tennessee, down in Tennessee. Oh, thank you, Jim. Yeah, right there in the song, Tennessee. Okay, well, you know, there's that idea that, you know, we can make it on our own. You know, I'm Daniel Boone or Davy Crockett, and I don't need any great society or Social Security or... Well, you just wait until you lose your job or get injured. Or your parents need to be put into a nursing home because you just can't care for them at home anymore because you got to work or because their disabilities are getting so bad or whatever. Yeah, I mean, the day is going to come for all of us. And Lamar Alexander and Bob Corker, the two Republican senators from Tennessee, want to say, we're going to hold hostage the debt limit ceiling. The ability of the federal government to pay bills run up by George W. Bush, we're going to hold that hostage. And what we want for that is $1 trillion in cuts. $1 trillion. You know, 1,000 million is $1 billion. 1,000 billion is $1 trillion. They want $1 trillion in cuts in Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. These guys are nuts.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And I hope if you live in Tennessee, you will share your opinion with them. And even if you don't, you should share your opinion with them. We'll be right back.
Working out, losing weight, maybe using tanning spray, becoming more attractive in general. Reading more, watching less, learning all the rules for chess, becoming somewhat smarter in general.
Welcome back. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. And speaking of Tennessee, hey, we got a couple calls from Tennessee. Jim in Andersonville, Tennessee. My thoughts on Bob Corker and Lamar Alexander.
Hi, Tom. Love your show.
Thank you.
I moved here from Florida, and my experience here is basically that there is just no opposition whatsoever. The Democratic Party here is pretty much non-existent. A lot of times I go in to vote and there's not even a candidate running on the Democratic side of the ballot. And the last guy that we had that ran for the House of Representatives, the Democratic Party came out and said don't vote for him because he was some sort of a plant. The guy wanted to do away with the education system and everything else. I mean, he was... He was more right-wing than the right-wing guy that ran.
Yeah, so he's like a libertarian who was running as a Democrat. Amazing.
Yeah,
So Jim, I don't want to personalize this too much, but probably the best advice that I could give, or the best exhortation, the call to action that I could ask of Tennesseans, is to show up at the local Democratic Party meeting and become a precinct committee person, run for office, help others run for office, and start building out an infrastructure in that state. We need to go back to Howard Dean's 50-state strategy and, you know, build, you know, good democratic structures progressive structures, even movement politics in every state. Does that make sense?
Makes total sense.
Yeah. And
I live in a very rural area, so it's hard to get people together like that, but
yeah.
It's something that, I've been listening to you say over and over again, and I do need to get up and do that.
Well, and the other thing is, if you go to movetoamend.org, one of the things that's so impressive about this, David Cobb has succeeded in pulling together libertarians and progressives, Democrats and Republicans, right across the board, people who say it's not right that corporations be considered people and that money be considered speech. And in many cases, they're saying it because there's a hog farm just down the road and the stink is driving them out of the neighborhood, or they're fracking and now their well water is ruined. I mean, a lot of good Republicans in rural areas who think of themselves as, you know, fierce and independent, when the big corporation comes in and tries to squash them like a bug, suddenly they're saying, hey, wait a minute. And movetoamend.org has, you have the ability to create a local group in your community, in your neighborhood. And they're doing a lot of these in rural areas all across the country. So check that out, too. And that's the movement politics part. That transcends politics itself. And that's a powerful one, too. Jim, thank you for calling and sharing your story.
My pleasure.
I appreciate
it. Thanks.
And thanks for watching us there in Andersonville, Tennessee. In Knoxville, Tennessee, Ralph. Hey, Ralph. Your thoughts on Bob Corker, Lamar Alexander, and their wackadoodle plan to cut $1 trillion out of Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid.
Well, Tom, if I said what I really think about it, it couldn't go over the air.
Yeah, I'd have to beep you.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're both scumbags, in my opinion. You know, they have no feelings towards people. I mean, I don't really know what goes through people's minds like that. The guy, Jim from Anderson County, is telling the truth. There's maybe two Democrats in Knoxville maybe 180,000 people. I think me and my cousin and the rest of my family are all Republicans.
Wow.
But I don't exactly what you do about it. Maybe organize. I've tried to find the number here in town, you know, where I can call, you know, for the Democratic Party, maybe get involved. And it just seemed like Jim said, it's almost non-existent.
Wow. Well, y'all need to get organized.
We need to do something. Now, I vote Democratic every election, but
yeah,
it just seems like I'm, you know, just kind of. Yeah,
it seems to me, Ralph, that if the people of Tennessee, if the Republicans of Tennessee, or people who call themselves Republicans, who, you know, were to know that Bob Corker and Lamar Alexander, their two Republican senators today, proposed. And, you know, it's probably not going to be a big national news story. And in statewide media is pretty much a joke these days. It's all owned by the same big national corporations. So they probably won't find out. But if they did, if the good Republicans of Tennessee were to realize that these guys are trying to cut Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, I think they might, you know, I'm not sure when each of these guys is up for reelection. But, did either one of them run in the last election? Do you know?
Yeah, Corker, he just got reelected.
So Corker just got reelected. So he's got six more years, and Lamar Alexander has either two or four more years.
14, yeah. You know, Alexander, he's ran for president. I guess he's ran for everything except dog catcher.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't know what we could do, Tom. You know, I'm just glad you gave me a forum to kind of blow off some of this hot air. I'm
pleased to do it.
By him. I'm, you know, everywhere I go, it's just, you're afraid to say anything down here because he ended up getting lynched.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, man. That's
anyways,
scary
stuff. I appreciate
stuff.
Let me talk.
Okay. Well, thank you for the call, and thanks for watching us there in Knoxville, Tennessee, Ralph. And I appreciate the call. And keep up the good work. I mean, get something going here. Steve in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, Steve, got a minute to the break. It's all yours.
Hey, Tom. Tennessee sounds a little bit like parts of Arizona here, too.
Yeah. Yeah. That's happening all over the country.
Oh, God, yes. Well, anyways, you know, we've got, a big thing coming up in a few weeks. I think they call it the inauguration.
Yeah.
And, 4 years ago, they had a big old party and at the caucus room. And I'd kind of like to know, I don't know if you and me are going to be invited or not. I kind of doubt it. But where's the where's Luntze and the rest of the wrecking crew going to have the party at this year?
Yeah, Paul Ryan and his gang, they 4 years ago, they met at the Caucus Room restaurant here in Washington, D.C., and plotted to destroy the Obama presidency and blow up America in the process, economically anyway, and arguably culturally.
It's real patriotic. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And also, you know, I got to say this on a matter of seriousness. I think you're exactly spot on with what's going to happen with this country, you know, in 2 or 3 or 4 years. It's got to go one way or the other, and it's challenging times.
Yeah, it is, and it's exciting times in a way, you know, too. I mean, we're living in at a historical pivot point here in the United States and, frankly, all around the world. Steve, thank you for the call. I don't know where that meeting's going to be held. You know, the next caucus room conspiracy meeting. It might be in the caucus room. I should probably check that out the night of the inauguration. I mean, I'll be here in town. I'm going to put Ellen Ratner on this. She learns about these things.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
You know, the old commercial, you know, give it to Mikey. Mikey will lead anything. Well, you know, ask Ellen. Ellen knows everything. She knows everybody. We'll have to ask Ellen. Well, the year changes, the calendar turns over. I mean, it's... Remember Y2K? Everybody was all hysterical. You know, the Mayans calendar, it's come and gone. We're still here. Is the fiscal cliff going to be the end of the world? Nah. Is the debt ceiling? You know, the Republicans are going to try and, you know, destroy Social Security with it and Medicare and Medicaid. They're basically trying to undo the Lyndon Johnson administration and the Franklin Roosevelt administration. They're really, really upset that two Democratic presidents got really popular by creating programs that people actually want, need, and use, and are more than pleased to pay for. So, you know, I don't get why the billionaires are so upset about, you know, Social Security anyway. You only pay your first $110,000 in income in taxes on Social Security. If you know, if you're one of these Wall Street guys and you made $1 billion last year, you made $999,890,000 and didn't pay a penny of it in Social Security taxes. You only paid Social Security taxes on your first $110,000. So why are you so upset about it? Why do you have Corker and Alexander, Bob Corker and Lamar Alexander, the two Republican senators from Tennessee, saying cut a trillion dollars out of Social Security and Medicare in exchange for raising the debt ceiling? Oh, come on. Paul, is it Palma Valley, California?
Yes, it is.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to say that the NRA could also stand for Narcissistic Republicans of America.
So you think Bob Corker and Lamar Alexander are NRA members of this new organization that you've just invented?
Yes,
yeah.
I do.
Okay.
That's what kind of brought it to my mind there.
Yeah, okay. Thank you very much, Paul. I appreciate the call. Tim in Rockville, Tennessee. Hey, Tim, what's up? Thanks for listening to TuneIn Radio.
Thank you, Tom. I think it's a bluff. It's the fiscal bluff is what I prefer to call it.
Yeah.
Corker was just reelected with, I think, about 70% of the vote.
Wow.
Alexander's up in 2 years, and I think there's rumors that Ashley Judd, the actress, may run against him. I'm stuck here.
I think actually Ashley Judd is thinking about running against Mitch McConnell in Kentucky. Whoops. He dropped off. We've lost him. Okay. In any case, that's the rumor that I've heard. But, okay, so, wow, Corker won with 70%. That's astounding. That's kind of sad, actually. David in Olympia, Washington. Hey, David, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I want to see if I can convince you to support nuclear power.
Okay. Take your best shot.
we're sitting on a nuclear power plant already. The Earth is, scientists estimate that half the warmth of the Earth is produced by degrading natural uranium and thorium.
And half a dozen other actinides, yes. You know, the whole bottom row of the periodic table.
Sooner or later we're going to run out of fossil fuels, and I'm totally in support of alternatives. But we should what I would ask of you maybe is to consider the idea of supporting conversion of uranium power plants over to what's called a liquid fluoride thorium reactors. And
I've had a number of people share with me the Scientific American article about this, and
there's tons. The easiest way is go to YouTube and look up Lifter.
Yeah.
Just take out the vowels, and you have LFTR, and you'll have about a 5-minute video, real short.
Yeah.
And quick.
Yeah. In principle, if you can make it work and it's safe and all that kind of thing, and it is so simple to extract energy from the wind and from the sun. And sun, if you're a fan of nuclear power, the sun is fusion, right? It's the ultimate, it's the holy grail of nuclear power. That's fusion energy. And the wind is arguably a consequence of that. And there's plenty of geothermal power. When Louise and I were in Reykjavik last year, the 98% of the electricity and the heat in that city comes from being on an active volcano.
I agree. But there are some problems with wind. The wind and the solar is intermittent.
That's why you have hydrogen storage systems.
Well, here's the other thing. We have a problem with rare earths. And when we dig up rare earths, we spill out thorium all over the place. There's big piles of thorium. And the reason why we can't create, high-tech, the really powerful magnets is because, in China they can do it because they can just throw the thorium all over the place. They don't care. If we take that natural thorium and we burn it, you can burn it fully in the reactors. You can just everything but 1%. You're only
what does it decay down to?
Of the uranium. What?
Does it decay down to lead like most of the reactinides?
What you can do is you can create like a good amount of the magnet material and a lot of other things that are actually very useful. But the stuff that you don't want it can decay within 300 years rather than 10,000 years.
Yeah.
And it's really advantageous to consider. I've looked into it. I've spent
Not mad dog opposed to it the way I am fission reactors, normal uranium fission reactors. And if this system could operate, if it could work without Price Anderson, without you and me backstopping it, because the nuclear power industry would not exist if it was not for the Price Anderson Act, if we did not take the liability on it. Wall Street would never finance a nuclear reactor. If you could do away with Price Anderson and you can run thorium reactors, I'm not going to stand in your way.
That seems unfair. Why not take a 10-year conversion time? So we just in 10 years we're going to convert all our uranium reactors.
Why don't we do what Germany did? They said that they needed to build 2 gigawatts worth of nuclear reactors, and they wanted to get off after Chernobyl. They wanted to get off nuclear power, and so they put together this program where they backstop the banks for loans to homeowners to put solar arrays on their roofs. And then they backstop the power companies saying, take that money that you would have spent on building a new nuclear power plant and use it to buy electricity, from people who have solar power on their roof at 7 times the normal rate for a 10-year period, which is the period of the loan. And so basically people got solar panels that have a minimum 50-year lifespan on their roofs for a 10-year mortgage, and they were able to pay the mortgage off by selling the electricity. And now you take a train across Germany, and everywhere you go, and this is the cloudiest country in Europe, by the way, and everywhere you go, you see, solar panels. They had to shut this program down.
It's cost.
They had to shut this program down because it was so successful. They generated 12 gigawatts worth of power. They got 12 nuclear reactors out of this thing. And it's like their grid can't handle it now. Now the next big project for Germany is they've got to create a smart grid for it.
Okay. Again,
and people are storing this stuff in their houses.
It's going to need high-tech magnets, and it's going to need that material.
Yeah.
And so either way, we're throwing thorium all over the place.
Okay.
Okay.
David, I got it. You're essentially repeating what you said, and I'm like I said, I'm no expert on thorium. I'm not going to debate it with you. Or against you. In other words, I give. My only stipulation is if you can make it work without Price Anderson, because you can make solar work without Price Anderson, you can make wind work without Price Anderson. We don't have to backstop these technologies. They're simple. They're straightforward. They're clean. They work. So if you can make it work, you know, God bless you. More power to you. Thank you for the call. Charles in Reagan, Tennessee. Hey, Reagan. Hey, Charles.
Hi. I heard you guys wanted to hear why Corcoran Alexander from Tennessee is elected.
Yes, sir.
It's because the majority of people here in Tennessee are Democrats. But for some reason or other, Democrats just don't vote. I don't have a clue. I don't know why. They just don't vote.
Really?
And my congresswoman is Marsha Blackburn. And I'm going to tell you something. I have never seen such a pathetic piece of junk in my life as Marsha Blackburn. I'm a disabled veteran. I called that office and told them about the problems I was having with VA. That office sent me a letter back saying, Mr. Lanham, all your Social Security problems are taken care of. You'll never have another problem with Social Security again. These people are losers.
Interesting. So you're not happy with the Republicans there in Tennessee?
No, not at all.
Where is Reagan, Tennessee?
Reagan, Tennessee is a little outside of Jackson.
Oh, okay. And it's got nothing to do with Ronald, I'm assuming. It's probably a much older name than that. All righty. Well, Charles, have you been involved at all with the Democratic Party politics in that
I donate to DNC, both state and national. I talk to folks. I worked at a factory here in Lexington, and I asked about 30 people that I know beyond a doubt in my mind. And they told me that, you know, they just didn't vote. And I knew without a doubt in my mind that they were Democrats.
Yeah.
I asked two Republicans if they voted, and both of them said yes.
Yeah. Huh.
And
So we are looking at a failure to communicate here, a failure to, as the old movie line goes, a failure to get people out to the polls. Charles, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. And thanks for watching us there in Tennessee. We will be back. It's 45 minutes past the hour. It's Anything Goes Friday here toward the end of the year. The president is going to be addressing the nation shortly about his negotiations with Congress. If it happens before we wrap up the show at 6, I'll let you know.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And for our listeners in the Seattle area, just a reminder, starting next week, 91.3 FM, KBCS, 91.3 FM in Seattle.
Should old acquaintance be forgotten?
Hey, thanks so much to our show director, Louise Hartman, to my executive producer, Sean Taylor, to our associate producer, Shane Farnan, our video director, Jim Javinsky, to our phone screener, Danielle Gilday, to our writer-researcher, Sam Sachs, to Alva Goldbook for video production, to our webmasters, Nigel Peacock and Jamie Holly, to our business manager, Ron Hartenbaum, to all the folks at the various companies that syndicate this program, Dow Global commercially, Pacific Radio non-commercially, CRN Network on cable systems, Free Speech TV on Dish Network and DirecTV, all the cable providers that carry our show as television, Comcast, Manhattan Neighborhood Networks, and others around the country. To all the great folks at Free Speech TV and RTTV who work on The Big Picture, to our newsletter editor, Sue Nethercutt, and all the folks in our chat room, hey, to Ellen Ratner and Victoria Jones and everyone at the Talk Radio News Service, to Jay Goodman Tamboli for tech support, and to our affiliates, our sponsors, and to you for supporting our program. Thank you, and I wish you the very best in the new year. The president has not yet come out to speak. We do have the White House website up, and we've got the audio and video from it. And so we will bring that to you if he comes out and says something in the next 10 minutes or 9 minutes here and as we wrap up our show. But in the meantime, Brian in Denver, listening on AM 760. Oh, hang on just a second, Brian. The president is about to speak. Let's hear what he has to say.
Here comes the president.
Good afternoon, everybody. For the past couple of months, I've been working with leaders of both parties to try and forge an agreement that would grow our economy and shrink the deficit. A balanced plan that would cut spending in a responsible way, but also ask the wealthiest Americans to pay a little more. And above all, protect our middle class and everybody who's striving to get into the middle class. I still want to get this done. It's the right thing to do for our families, for our businesses, and for our entire economy. But the hour for immediate action is here. It is now. We're now at the point where in just 4 days, every American's tax rates are scheduled to go up by law. Every American's paycheck will get considerably smaller. And that would be the wrong thing to do. for our economy, it would be bad for middle-class families, and it would be bad for businesses that depend on family spending. Fortunately, Congress can prevent it from happening if they act right now. I just had a good and constructive discussion here at the White House with Senate and House leadership about how to prevent this tax hike on the middle class. And I'm optimistic we may still be able to reach an agreement that can pass both houses in time. Senators Reid and McConnell are working on such an agreement as we speak. But if an agreement isn't reached in time between Senator Reid and Senator McConnell, then I will urge Senator Reid to bring to the floor a basic package for an up or down vote, one that protects the middle class from an income tax hike, extends the vital lifeline of unemployment insurance to 2 million Americans looking for a job, and lays the groundwork for future cooperation on more economic growth and deficit reduction. Guys, I can hear you over here. I believe such a proposal could pass both houses with bipartisan majorities, as long as those leaders allow it to actually come to a vote. If members of the House or the Senate want to vote no, they can. But we should let everybody vote. That's the way this is supposed to work. If you can get a majority in the House and you can get a majority in the Senate, then we should be able to pass a bill. So the American people are watching what we do here. Obviously, their patience is already thin. This is deja vu all over again. America wonders why it is that in this town, for some reason, you can't get stuff done in an organized timetable. Why everything always has to wait till the last minute? Well, we're now at the last minute. And the American people are not going to have any patience for a politically self-inflicted wound to our economy. Not right now. The economy is growing, but sustaining that trend is going to require elected officials to do their jobs. The housing market is recovering, but that could be impacted if folks are seeing smaller paychecks. The unemployment rate is the lowest it's been since 2008. But already you're seeing businesses and consumers starting to hold back because of the dysfunction that they see in Washington. Economists, business leaders, all think that we're poised to grow in 2013, as long as politics in Washington don't get in the way of America's progress. So we've got to get this done. I just want to repeat, we had a constructive meeting today. Senators Reid and McConnell are discussing a potential agreement where we can get a bipartisan bill out of the Senate, over to the House, and done in a timely fashion so that we met the December 31st deadline. But given how things have been working in this town, we always have to wait and see until it actually happens. The one thing that the American people should not have to wait and see is some sort of action. So if we don't see an agreement between the two leaders in the Senate, I expect a bill to go on the floor, and I've asked Senator Reid to do this, put a bill on the floor that makes sure that taxes on middle-class families don't go up, that unemployment insurance is still available for 2 million people, and that lays the groundwork then for additional deficit reduction and economic growth steps that we can take in the new year. But let's not miss this deadline. That's the bare minimum that we should be able to get done. And it shouldn't be that hard, since Democrats and Republicans both say they don't want to see taxes go up on middle-class families. And I just have to repeat.
Okay, as much as I don't like to step on the President of the United States verbally here, basically what he just said is we got no deal. I mean, that's the bottom line. And because the way things are done in this town, which is, you know, political speak for the damn Republicans are obstructing this thing, they're going to try and hold us hostage. So we're in for a real interesting week coming up. Coming up Monday on the Tom Hartman Program, check out my rant after the Benghazi attacks. At the end of the day, this is not about Islam. And as we leave 2012 behind, we'd like to wish all of you a very safe and happy New Year's Eve. And thank you for listening from all of us here on the Tom Hartman Program. And don't forget, democracy really and truly does begin with you. It's not a spectator sport. You got to show up. Tag, you're it, especially if you're in Tennessee. Get out there and occupy something. We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.